It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 114 of a very sporty edition of Sports Day Plus. At 6:30, it is the first of two segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel, talking Longhorn football and more. And in mere seconds, I'm spending the first two segments discussing the rapidly shifting college sports landscape with Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Ross Dellinger is a longtime college football and college sports reporter who currently hones that craft for Yahoo Sports. You can find his work at sports.yahoo.com. Also, make sure to give him a follow on Twitter at Ross Dellinger. That's D-E-L-L-E-N-G-E-R. And in the last week or so, he's come out with a couple of massive articles on what the immediate future of college sports may look like as it pertains to the NCAA and the multi-billion dollars worth of lawsuits that they are facing right now and their attempts to maybe settle those lawsuits and what that will mean for the NCAA, for the member institutions, that being the schools and athletics departments who are represented by the NCAA, and the college athletes themselves. And Ross is now nice enough to join me to talk about that and a whole lot more. Ross, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I am great, and I have to tell you, I really appreciate the work that you're doing in helping us to better understand where college sports and college football are headed in the next couple to next 10 years and beyond through your work with Yahoo Sports. And you had a piece come out late last week that I think is hugely important with the overall direction of all of this. So is there a Cliff's Notes version of your article titled New College Athlete Compensation Model May Cost Power Schools $300 million each over 10 years?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts, and certainly the settlement negotiations in the concepts of a new model are evolving and changing, and probably will be for the next few weeks and maybe months. So obviously, at the center of it is this new athlete compensation model that will allow. Schools to pay athletes directly, share revenue with athletes, and put a cap, an annual per school cap of probably, you know, we reported the range of $17 to $20 million. It's a kind of a fluctuating figure for a number of reasons, and it'll probably change over the duration of the settlement, which is would be about 10 years. But the bottom line is schools will be able to share revenue with athletes around $18 to $20 million per year per school. They'll distribute that to athletes. That's kind of one part of this and probably the biggest part. I think the second part of any new model would be the expansion of scholarships, like I wrote in there. The NCAA scholarship limits will be kind of expanded in the sport specific scholarship limits. So, I mean, a good example is baseball. You know, baseball provides 11, or schools are restricted to 11.7 baseball scholarships under NCAA rule for a roster of around 32 to even 40. And so what will happen is there will be a roster limit set for each sport, and schools can supply scholarships to the entire roster. So that's kind of the second big change that we're going to see in any new model. And then the third thing, part of the settlement, obviously, is back damages, back pay, about $2.8 to $2.9 billion in back pay to athletes as part of this settlement agreement. And that will come from the schools. There's been a lot of reporting around that coming from, quote, the NCAA. The NCAA doesn't have any money. The NCAA has NCAA tournament money that it distributes to the schools in distribution. So that money will come from the school distribution pot. So those are kind of like the three main concepts of the settlement-related new model that could be coming to college sports.
Let's work backwards on that, because $30 million per year for these major universities over 10 years, when you're talking about, let's say, the ACC or the Big 12 or any college football conference below those levels, obviously the SEC and Big 10 are considered above that right now with what they're bringing in TV revenue-wise, starting with their new deals, that completely eliminates what each of the schools in the ACC, Big 12, and some of those lesser conferences would be making based on those TV deals. So why does that make sense for them, or why would they consider agreeing to something like that? Is it simply a matter that these member institutions are all representative of the NCAA and have had a certain decision-making power up to this point that is now considered a crucial part of this lawsuit?
Well, you know, if you have the way the lawsuit was brought, it was brought against six different parties. The NCAA is one party, and then the five power conferences are listed each as a party, I believe, a defendant in the case. So each of the six parties could settle on their own, from what I understand. So if you have one league decide to settle, then that puts that league in a lot of ways at an advantage over the others. If that league would be able to distribute and share revenue with their athletes because they settled this lawsuit and came to this agreement. So I think everybody's kind of in it together. And it's easiest to kind of all do it together. And I think that's what we've seen happen, is everybody kind of agree that it would be good for all power leagues in the NCAA as a whole, as well, to agree to settle the case for a number of reasons. So, you know, number one, conceivably it would protect you in future lawsuits. Not all future lawsuits. Number two, you've been fighting for congressional help now in the NCAA for 5 years. Maybe this moves the wheels of Congress a little bit. If you've agreed on a settlement, maybe it gets codified, and then you can have a permanent model that will last decades, maybe, perhaps. So that's kind of, you know, why you settle. I mean, the main reason, really, and then number three, obviously, is if you take it to court, you're probably going to lose. The NCAA has lost plenty. Rarely wins in court when it comes to these antitrust cases. And, you know, if you lose, instead of paying about $2.9 billion in back damages, you risk paying $8, $9, $10 billion in back damages, because the cost would be tripled.
Makes a lot of sense when you put it that way. He is Ross Dellinger, covers college sports for Yahoo Sports. Read his work at sports.yahoo.com. And make sure to check him out on Twitter as well, at Ross Dellinger. Got one more segment coming up with Ross on the other side that does include, yeah, the idea of increasing scholarship numbers in sports like college baseball seems like a good one. How does that impact Title IX, though? And also, there continues to be this insistence that in spite of everything pointing to money for these student athletes coming directly from athletics departments, that the student athletes themselves will not be considered employees of the athletics department or university. Those two things don't seem to make logistical sense to me. We'll see what Ross feels about that. And more coming up here on Sports Day Plus. Also, don't forget, it is a Wednesday. That means I'm spending a couple of segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas starting at about 6:30 right here on Sports Day Plus. Heard weekdays from 6 to 7 p.m. on 1027 ESPN and 1027ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports. Read his work at sports.yahoo.com. Also check him out on Twitter at Ross Dellinger. He's done a great job in the last week or so of keeping people up to speed on what is happening in the shifting landscape of college sports, the possibility of the NCAA and its member institutions trying to settle with these various lawsuits. It could cost north of $2 billion, but if they let it go to trial, it could be a whole lot more than that. And Ross, as far as the expansion of scholarships is concerned, you're right, college baseball is the best example of a popular sport that doesn't receive its necessary scholarship due. Now, private schools have a little bit of a loophole that they get to work with, and they can ensure most of the guys on their roster are not having to pay for school as they are playing baseball as well. But the confusing part for me about all of that, Ross, is that doesn't that go against what Title IX was supposed to secure, and that is an equal distribution of scholarship between men's and women's sports at the college level?
Well, yeah, if you add scholarships on the men's side for a men's sport, you'd have to do it for the women too. So if you add 10, 20 scholarships for baseball, you'd need to add 10, 20 scholarships in some other women's sport. That is certainly the case. Your listeners are probably wondering how I got to the $30 million mark. You read that headline of the story, $300 million per school per year for the next 10 years is the commitment that it would cost. And that's roughly $30 million per school per year. You know, that assumes that a school will hit the cap, the revenue sharing cap of about $20 million, plus $2 to $3 million of back damages withheld from the NCAA. So you're up to $23, $24 million. And then the last part of that is scholarships. How much do you expand? Because all this is permissive. So you don't have to expand scholarships at all. But you know, because of recruiting and the competition in college athletics, scholarships will be expanded. But you do have to expand. Where you expand the men, you have to expand the women. And some ADs will expand scholarships by a couple million. Some will expand scholarships by 8 to 10 million. It just depends. There'll be a range, and this is all kind of permissive. So basically, this settlement is just lifting the rules from NCAA scholarship restrictions, as well as obviously the revenue sharing piece, the prohibition right now on schools directly paying athletes, that'll be lifted as well. And so while there's a cap on the revenue sharing, you don't have to get to that cap, just like you don't have to expand scholarships at all. It's kind of up to the school.
Is it possible to separate football from the other scholarship numbers before it's all said and done, since obviously football makes far more money than any other sport at the college level, which would then help to level those overall scholarship numbers out without requiring the addition of X number of sports or X number of scholarships to a given sport?
Well, that's been kind of a talking point for many years. And the fact that it's never happened probably tells you that it may not be happening anytime soon. It's not part of the settlement agreement, I don't believe. It's not part of the new model. Is splitting out football. I think that while that does provide some solutions probably to a lot of this, splitting football away from all the other sports and maybe even apart from the university is something college presidents and many commissioners too, I think, want to avoid, is separating that out and putting that on a different island. Even though it is certainly different, right, than any other sport. And really, it's kind of why we're here, why college athletics is in the place that it's in, because of the money generated by football, number one, and then the money spent on football, number two, spent on coaching salaries and facilities.
Schools paying athletes and the addition of a rev-sharing model does make a lot of sense. My concern with all of that, though, Ross, is that these same school officials who have wrung their hands for many years about the idea of amateurism and then how athletes should possibly be paid to go along with Charlie Baker and the NCAA in their efforts to create some sort of federal legislation keep insisting that these college athletes, especially football players, should not be considered employees of the university. Now, people may wonder why that is, and it seems simple to me. It has to do with the potential for short and long-term disability as a result of playing the sport for that school, which is then paying you money. Is it possible for any of this to happen without these college athletes being considered employees of the university at the end of the day?
Well, that's a big question, Mark. Maybe the biggest outside of how Title IX is applied to a revenue sharing model. I think the biggest question mark would be, does this settlement and this new model serve as an alternative to employment? I think that it remains kind of unanswered. I think that that there are ongoing proceedings, and the National Labor Relations Board has three different proceedings that could each lead to athletes being deemed employees. There's a case in Pennsylvania also could deem athletes employees. So it's that's still a possibility that athletes could be deemed employees despite all this settlement. But it will take a while. In the presidential election, as well as elections in the Senate and the House, congressional things could impact that as well, because Congress can certainly create, well, Congress could codify what they call codify this settlement in this new model. And that would maybe protect athletes as students and not employees. And then the change in potentially the president controls the National Labor Relations Board, the people who are on it. So an election can shift the board and members of the board, which then could impact a board's ruling on this issue. So it's all very complicated. But the bottom line is we don't really know if, despite the settlement of the new model, if athletes will one day be deemed employees. It's still possible.
I just feel like if some sort of rule is created that keeps them from being called employees, you will be able to poke holes in that pretty quickly, and it will be shot down at some level within the court system. All right, last question now, Ross, because Greg Sankey very flippantly dismissed the idea not too long ago that the SEC and Big Ten could ultimately break away from the rest of the conferences in college football and create their own Super League. It makes a lot of sense to me and a lot of other people, but Sankey was dismissive and seemed to bristle at the idea that some are still pushing this concept. But when you look at all the concessions that are having to be made to keep the SEC and Big Ten as a part of this expanded college football playoff, ultimately in the next 5 to 7 years, let's say, by the end of this decade, do you think the Big Ten and SEC are doing their own thing in separation from the Big 12, ACC, and the G5 conferences in college football?
Well, I think the negotiations, the CFP negotiations that transpired in February and March probably were a good window into the future of college athletics. The CFP revenue structure changed and tilted very strongly toward the Big Ten and SEC. They'll get more money. They'll probably get more access just based on the teams they have, and they'll control the format, any future format probably. All of that kind of tells you that those two leagues will probably one day have enough power, authority, money to kind of break away. And it might not be a decision themselves to just leave. It may be that everybody else falls so far behind that competing regularly with everyone doesn't make sense. And I think that, sure, you know, I think that we could see that. I think that this revenue sharing agreement coming potentially could even further separate the two leagues, the Big Ten and SEC, from the other two, Big 12 and ACC. And certainly those four, the gap being grown between those four and the group of five.
Yeah, I feel like ultimately the ACC, the Big 12, whatever's left of those conferences, mind you, as well as those lesser conferences, are eventually going to be look around and say, why are we giving so many concessions to two groups who already have such a financial advantage over us? It makes more sense for us to be in a completely separate league to actually have a chance to compete with one another for national championships in a given year. And it sounds like you're of that same mindset, not just with the SEC and Big Ten, but some of those less rich leagues, I guess, is the simple way to put it.
Yep. I think that's probably a good summation of the situation.
He is Ross Dellinger, does a phenomenal job covering college football for Yahoo Sports. Check his work out at sports.yahoo.com. And he's nice enough to join me for a few minutes to talk about these things on Sports Day Plus. Ross, thank you so much for the time today, man.
Yep, no problem. Thanks.
All right, coming up, it is a Wednesday. That means I get a couple of segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. That's coming up next here on Sports Day Plus on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
It is a Wednesday, which means I get to spend a couple of segments with my friend Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show weekly, typically Wednesdays. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How are you doing today?
My friend, I'm doing well. Just traveling the back roads of East Texas, checking in on some recruits and doing what we do every year in May. It's spring evaluation period, my man.
I feel like I need to make your unofficial or maybe your official song, Willie Nelson's on the road again, because you are always on the road, my friend. Where are you visiting today?
Yeah, I'm over in Texarkana today, checking in with Texas High. They've got a top 50 running back, Texas Priority, Tre'Darrion Ball. Also heading over to Pleasant Grove, checking in on four-star edge Texas commit Lance Jackson. So just hitting the roads over here in Texarkana, trying to find some future Longhorns.
Well, you just mentioned the running back position, and I wanted to ask you about a running back this week. Ball carrier out of DeBoot, the great state of Louisiana, Shreveport Calvary Baptist running back James Simon. It sounds like he's on the Longhorns' radar, and the Longhorns are on his as well. What can you tell us about James Simon?
Yeah, this is a kid that I think, if he commits to Texas pretty soon, I think Texas fans will be really happy. 5'11", 195, 10'5 kid out of Shreveport. Comes from a family of athletes. His dad, John Simon, was a wide receiver at Louisiana Tech. He's now the offensive coordinator at Grambling. He was an assistant at Arizona State, Memphis. So he's been around the college game. His older brother, John, just signed with Louisiana Tech's class of 2024. So he'll start in Ruston here in the fall. And James might be the best of all of them. You know, this is a four-star with 30-plus offers, Notre Dame, LSU, Alabama, Texas A&M, a lot of schools in the mix. But I think Texas looks the best right now. I went and hung out with him and his family yesterday at Calvary Baptist Academy. And I think James is getting to a point where he's ready to make a decision. He's been invited and will attend the On3 Elite Series in Nashville in the last week in May. I will be in attendance as well, and so we're definitely looking forward to that. But I think you're going to see a decision pretty soon. He's got one official visit scheduled, just one, and that's to Texas on June 21st to the 23rd. He was on campus for the spring game. Really liked how they used the running backs. But more than that, he's built a deep relationship with Tashaar Choice. And after Coach Choice put five guys in the NFL draft in the last two drafts, that really has a lot of gets these tailbacks' attention. And so I love where James Simon in Texas is sitting right now. I would expect a decision in the next few weeks, and right now I think Texas is the leader.
I don't necessarily want to rank these coaches one to whatever, but I feel like Tashaar Choice is in that top tier of guys that you just trust whatever it is he's trying to do, even if it doesn't necessarily make sense to us non-running backs. We see what Tashaar has done, not just at Texas but elsewhere, and realize this dude has got it going on.
Yeah, the thing with Coach Choice, you got to understand with these recruits is, you know, he is a younger guy. He's not that old. And he's very relatable to these guys. And so, you know, a lot of them, I don't think even realize that this guy played the NFL for a few years. He was a running back with the Dallas Cowboys before he had a storied career at Georgia Tech. He's really good at building relationships. And when he identifies a guy, there's a good chance he's going to get him. He doesn't strike out very often. And now I think Choice is taking on even more of a role because he's got such good roots in the southeastern country, in the SEC region. You know, he's from Thomasville, Georgia, and that's where he likes recruiting in that area. And it's not just tailbacks. He helps out with some of the other guys in those spots. And so Choice is growing, in my opinion, as a college football coach and recruiter. He's always been a great guy. He's always been really good with relationships and development. Don't forget, you know, Bijan, when he arrived, you know, he told Bijan, I love you, but you got some stuff to work on before you're ready for the NFL. And it didn't feel like Stan Drayton was ever really teaching the details. Rashawn Johnson, Jonathan Brooks, Jahmyr Gibbs, Keelan Robinson, they swear by Tashaar Choice. And so I think it's resonating with prospects now. And another thing you have to look at, and this is a good recruiting point for Texas, how many kids are they pulling out of the portal at running back? None.
Yeah.
Because Choice wants to get you in high school. He doesn't want bad habits. He wants to cultivate you from the start to the finish. And I think he's got a proven product and when he does that. So right now, he's definitely one of the top recruiters on this Texas staff, and give Sark credit for bringing him on and just make sure they keep this guy happy because he's always in the offseason got colleges and other programs looking for him.
What did he tell Bijan that he had to work on when he got here?
Getting better. Bijan had hit kind of not a wall, but Bijan came in stupendous. We know that. But Stan Drayton was in a point where they weren't really doing detailed stuff. And so when you're making jump cuts, you know, keeping your feet, keeping your hips sunk, when you're picking out blocks, watch Jonathan Brooks as he waits for blocks to develop. You know, sometimes Bijan wanted to hit a hole a little too quick. And if he waited a half second, the hole would open up and it would become a lane. And then all of a sudden a 5-yard gain turns into a 25-yard gain. And so just little details, nothing that had to change or work over Robinson, because Bijan was an unbelievable prospect in and of itself. But everybody needs to get better on the details. And Tashaar Choice just wanted to make it clear, he thought Bijan was a future star in the NFL, but if he wanted to be a long-term star in the NFL with sustainability, he needed to work on the little things. Bijan was 100% bought in. And if you ask Bijan right now, he'll tell you Tashaar Choice is one of the main reasons he's having success at the pro level.
Love to hear that. You don't want to make any assumptions with a guy who's a coach, a young coach especially, who seems very good at his position coach job. But does Tashaar Choice have OC and or head coaching desires at some point in the future too?
That's a great question. I could see that from an OC standpoint. I think he would be a tremendous play caller and an organizer of the offense. Head coach, I think in a small part, all assistant coaches kind of have a dream of being a head coach one day. I think maybe the older they get, they start to figure out their philosophy and their place. And some people are made to be leaders and run our program. Others are meant to be leaders and run an offense or run a running back room. And so that's a good question. The more Texas wins and the more running backs Tashaar Choice gets drafted, the more we're going to have to ask that question, because I think you're going to see a lot more college and pro teams start to approach Coach Choice with some of those, you know, potential availabilities. He's just that good. He's really got a niche for where he's at. But I think it's going to be a few more years till he figures out exactly what he might want to do ultimately down the road.
All right, I'm going to steer this bus into left field right now, but I'm only doing so because it's a slow week, and we've got a couple of segments to talk about whatever the heck we want to, Justin. You just mentioned the idea of leadership, and Tashard Choice seems like somebody who would be a good leader. He's well-liked. He's got the technical side down in terms of explaining to these guys what they need to do to be better. He shows tough love at times when he needs to, and at the end of the day, these guys love him. It seems like he is primed to be a leader on a grander scale at some point. For you, as somebody who has done some leading in your life, you are the leader of your family, you and your awesome son, who's like a freaking baseball all-star already, and you've been around other good and bad leaders too, I'm assuming, throughout your life. What do you think makes for a good leader in this day and age?
Man, you know, that's the question I feel like gets asked at every motivational conference. You know, it's one of those things where And the best people to ask are the ones that have done it.
Yeah.
And have done it more than us at a higher level. But, you know, what makes a great leader is humility.
Mm.
It's the understanding that, yes, you are the leader. You've got a say over this group. People respect what you're going to tell them. They're going to follow your lead. But if you're not humble, that means you don't listen. And all great leaders are great listeners. Now, they come with direction, and they're going to come with some finality when they make decisions, but you have to keep an open mind, and you have to be humble, because nobody knows it all. And every day, if we're not waking up trying to learn a little bit more, trying to get a little bit better, we're not going into a leading mode. We're not becoming what we need to be. And so, to me, the number one factor would be humility, because if you're not humble, you're closed-minded. If you're closed-minded, you're not going to climb very fast. And I don't know how many people are actually going to follow you when you ultimately are in that position. So you could bring on 10 other guys and you might get 10 different answers. But in my heart, I feel like it's being humble. If you bring humility to those guys, it shows them, I can relate to you. I'm just like you. I'm no better than you are. You're no better than me. Let's learn from each other. But ultimately, let's get the right answer and let's push forward with it. So for leadership qualities, number one on the chalkboard is going to be humility.
I love that answer, Justin, because a lot of people will say, I don't often hear that answer, because a lot of people will say good communication, and that's completely understandable. And by the way, good communication starts with the ability to properly listen, to truly listen to what somebody else is saying. And even if you don't necessarily go with them, to allow their voice to be heard goes a long ways in their overall buy-in. And humility plays into all of that. As you just said, it's one of those things where if you aren't humble enough to understand that you don't know it all, and that there are people who maybe your subordinates do understand a little bit more about something than you do, well, it's going to help you to better understand the overall system. And I think that's where there's sadly a major failure in this country right now, is there are people who get bumped into middle management or maybe straight up management who don't understand the inner workings of a system or a company, and therefore their requests or their ideas about how something needs to be done or how it needs to be troubleshot end up falling by the wayside, because they're clearly out of their element with regards to understanding even the basics of the issue with which they're supposed to be managing.
No, it's got to be, you want people to follow you. Well, you can't just start barking orders.
Nope.
If anything, you have to get down in the mud with them and show them that you're not better than them. I'll get down here and dig this ditch with you. Let's do it together.
Great stuff there, Justin. Hold that thought. I want to continue this coming up on the other side. He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas. Join me for a couple of segments every Wednesday. Segment 2 with Justin comes up next right here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show Wednesdays for a couple of segments. This is the second of two segments with Justin. We're just talking about leadership and how that translates to life and especially parenthood. And Justin, you had mentioned the importance of leaders to get down in the muck, if you will, to do the work with their subordinates. And a lot of that comes down to having a positive attitude as well.
Like with my son, you know, I tell him all the time, I don't care if he gets any base hits. I don't care if he has any put outs at shortstop, but your attitude is going to be great. Your body language is so much louder than your mouth.
Yep.
I said, as long as your body language is good and your attitude is good, you're going to have fun. You're going to learn. You're going to pick up stuff and others will follow you. Positive energy is addicting. You know, gratitude is reciprocal. Like these things matter in life. And I think going into, if you're humble and you let these guys know, hey, I can learn. You know, the smartest guys I've ever met hire smarter guys. It never fails.
Yeah.
I don't see smart guys hiring guys under them or guys that can do a good job but not a great job. I see guys, the really successful people, they hire people that are smarter than them. And to me, I think that's huge. You know, when we're looking at stuff on our staff at Inside Texas, we want to add people smarter than us because we want to grow too. A leader can grow just like the follower. And that follower can become a leader down the road with great examples and with humility. Why? Because they're open-minded and they understand you can learn more each day. And if you really do want people to follow you, you got to coach them hard, but you got to love them harder.
Completely agreed. Great leaders, well-run organizations, hire highly competent people. And by the way, just because you're a leader and you may have a visceral understanding of a lot of different things, that doesn't mean somebody can't be better at something else than you are. As a matter of fact, again, back to the growth thing, that's going to help you grow more, to be around somebody who knows a little bit more than you do. And this, I think this also speaks to just a basic, whether you're a leader or not, the importance of somebody willing to admit that they don't know something. I don't know is one of the best answers you can give. Sometimes when you do know something, but especially if you don't, because if you try and fake it, that will be found out by somebody who's even mildly competent at something. So to say I don't know gives you an opportunity to sit back and let somebody else, maybe they're BSing you, but maybe they're going to be able to understand something to where you will actually know it going forward.
Yeah, the I don't know is that's something else that I know you have to do with your kids and I'm doing with mine. You know, the I don't know is, you know, I tell my son it's okay to not know. That's okay. I said a lot of the times you're not going to know. And I said the best answer can be I don't know, or an even better answer could be I don't know, but let's figure it out.
Yep.
Let's figure it out. Either you bring it or I bring it. The whole point is getting it right. It doesn't matter who brought it in to get it right. It's that you get it all. The group is in unison on one way to do it, the proper way, the right way. And so there's just so many attributes of great leaders. And I think that's part and parcel to some of it.
Yeah. And you know, that's translatable also to parenthood too. It's like saying, I don't know is important to your kid. Apologizing is important for leaders too. If you screw something up, own that mistake, apologize, and yeah, you get an immense amount of respect in return versus acting like you're perfect at everything, which is an impossibility, but is also a major character flaw when it starts to go too far down that road, too.
It does, and, you know, I always use my son as an example because it's the most fresh thing in my mind, but the thing we've been working on lately is it's okay to laugh at yourself. And I tell him, I said, listen, you know, because, you know, some of his buddies, they'll pick on each other, and it's all in good fun. But I remind my son, I said, listen, if you'll laugh at yourself, you'll make way more friends in this world than you will if you don't. Mm-hmm. I said, listen, don't take yourself so seriously. It's okay to be wrong. It's okay to kind of do something goofy and laugh at yourself. And if anything, it endears you to other people. Because if you can sit there and screw something up and laugh it off, that shows people, hey, this is a guy I can vibe with. This is a person that doesn't take life too serious. This is a person that's actually willing to get it wrong and work to get it right. And so here lately, I told my son, I said, listen, Bubba, you need to laugh at yourself a little bit more. I said, it's okay to slip and fall and look goofy while you're doing it. Give a good laugh and then all your friends will pick you up and y'all will laugh about something else. And I love this conversation because there's just so many little factors that go into being a great leader. And I'm going to add that to it because I think laughing at yourself is essential because it does show some humility to those people. It shows, hey, I screwed up and I was goofy in this decision. And man, I'm about to laugh at myself because I messed this up. But I'm damn sure not going to do it again.
You're right. That harkens back to the ability to be humble. Tell me if this is going on in your house at all right now, Justin, because both of my kids separately are dealing with trash talkers at school, and they're coming home whining about it with their feelings hurt about it. And I'm like, look, I get it. It stinks to have some kids say something negative to you, but laugh it off and say something back. Now, you don't need to be hurtful necessarily, but you can joke about yourself, or you can maybe poke fun at them a little bit. And guess what's going to happen at the end of the day? You're both going to end up laughing at the ridiculousness of that situation. Now, that's hard for a little 9 or 7 year old to get, but if I can get them to understand that, they're going to be much better suited to deal with this world because the whole sticks and stones saying isn't totally accurate. Words can certainly hurt, but words at the ages of 9 or 7, it's not like you're getting cussed out or something that horrific or terrible or life-threatening is being said to you in most cases. So the ability to show a sort of resilience in those moments only continues to grow over time through the teenage years, early adulthood, and whatnot.
Yeah, I think you know this backstory. My son actually started kindergarten when he was 4. And so it was a little overwhelming for him.
Yeah.
And there were some kids in there that would pick on him. And so basically what I taught him was aloof. Just be aloof. I said, look, do you care what these kids say about you? And he said, no. And I said, okay. So whenever they do say them, just respond with cool. And they'll keep saying it. And then you just look at him and go, all right. And then just go the other way. And he's picked that up, and I've seen him use that now where, he'll have a certain kids in class that want to talk or, do stuff in the middle of work, and he'll just go, all right, and just completely ignore them. Do not let them even affect them, because I told Alexander, don't let other people dictate your mood. Don't give them that control. Don't give them that right. If they start running their mouth at you, just look at them and go, nah, bro, and go the other way. And I feel like he's picking that up, but I also know that's a process that you have to work on year after year. But yeah, we've crossed that bridge. And when people, I don't think he really gets any of that now, because he is pretty friendly with most of the kids. I do know there are some kids that still are going to be little kids, and that's just how the world works. But somebody will say something bad to him, and I'll say, well, what did you do? He said, cool, and just walk the other way.
It also helps.
The kid won't talk to him. Then the kid stopped saying anything to him.
It also helps when you're one of the best baseball players in your grade 2, I'm guessing.
Oh, God. Just don't let him hear this. I don't need his head getting any bigger.
All right, we took a little bit of a detour there, but we are going to end with some Longhorn football today because things still active, believe it or not, in the transfer portal. Now, Texas could be done, or there could be another guy or two who joins this roster by the end of the semester, throughout summer into fall practices. But Texas did get another defensive back from out west. San Jose State cornerback Javion Cole has decided he wants to continue his college career with Texas next season. What do Longhorn fans need to know about Cole?
This is what you need to know about Cole. He's about 5'10 and a half, 5'11, a really smart football player. Kind of worked his way up as a lower recruit, went to Cal Poly, had a good year, traded up to San Jose State, had an even better year. Now he's getting to come to Texas to play with the big boys. This is a very, very smart, savvy DB. Understands leverage, understands spacing in the zone, understands match quarters. Like right now, you could make an argument, and our Charlie Williams at Inside Texas made a really good point about this. Texas might have the smartest secondary in the country. Mm. Like, you've got a lot of guys back there now that understand. They may not be the top athlete in the program, but they understand damn well where they're supposed to be in every set, in every scheme, in every play. And from Manny Muhammad to Michael Taft to Derek Williams to Jelani McDonald to Gavin Holmes, Andrew Makuba, Jahdae Barron, you have got some high IQ guys. And sometimes you may not be the quickest guy back there, but if you understand leverage and you understand angles, you can make plays. And Javion Cole is going to bring that to Austin when he arrives in June. You know, I hate that they lost to Terrence Brooks. I think he's a tremendous player, and I think he's going to be successful wherever he goes. Javion Cole's going to come in, and he's going to add some really good reps. This is going to be a kid that's good for the locker room. He's appreciative. You know, a lot of times when the kid, he's like a Trey Moore, the edge from UTSA. They never really got recruited, so they don't take for granted everything they get once they get to Texas and they get on that level. I think Cole is going to be exactly like that. This is a guy that worked hard, traded up, used his intelligence to his weaponry. And if you watch his huddle at InsideTexas.com, this guy is clingy in coverage. He drapes himself over guys. It just adds another strong component to an already strong, deep roster in Austin.
Clingy, a bad quality for somebody that you're just starting to date, a great quality for a cornerback who covers dudes like a wet blanket. And a guy who is never clingy is Justin Wells of Inside Texas. InsideTexas.com, that Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show weekly, typically on Wednesdays for a couple of segments, even in weeks like this, helping me turn a lemon of content into a nice glass of lemonade by the time it's all said and done. Justin, thank you as always for the time, man. Safe travels.
Hey, nothing but love, Trey.
All right, that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.